Hello, everybody. This is John Marks, the editor of CopsAlive.com, and I want to welcome you to another edition of Cops Alive Audio Bulletin. I am very pleased to have my guest with me today. Our guest today is Mark Lamplew. He is the founder and program coordinator for First Responder Treatment. It is a treatment program designed specifically for first responders, and they work in cooperation with Transformations Treatment Centers. And Mark, I want to thank you for your time today. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, John.
It's my pleasure. Would you tell me a little bit about how you got to where you are today, how the treatment center came to be about, and what you're doing for first responders?
Well, basically, like I shared with you before, I was raised in a law enforcement family and firefighter family. My father's a cop. My grandfather's fire chief. I was a captain of a fire department. And, I also struggled with substance abuse, from an early age, even going into my 20s, into my late 20s.
Yeah.
And basically what happened was I ended up getting clean and sober. I started working in treatment, and I started first responder treatment essentially just to have a way to get information out to first responders and reach out to them to get help if they need it, because I remember, it being not discussed or talked about, kind of laughed at, or, if you act a fool on a Saturday night or drank too much, it was a joke.
Yeah.
And it was never taken seriously. So, I kind of wanted to be able to change that. So what ended up happening is, as first responder treatment grew, we decided at Transformation to put a program in place that it specifically addresses problems that first responders face, and give them a place to go to get the help that they need.
Well, and I want to commend you for that, because I think it's a big problem in our society. It's a big problem in our first responder professions. And I agree with you. I don't think we've embraced it to this day to a point where we acknowledge that, it seems to be a byproduct of the business, the stresses of the business, and we need to face the fact that we've got to start addressing it. In most cases, I would hope you would agree that the earlier we address the problem, the easier it is to treat. Is that true?
Absolutely. I think a lot of the old sayings are, you have to hit bottom, but, I kind of disagree with that. I think getting it addressed in the beginning and, catching it on the early warning signs, it maybe help somebody improve a lot more. They don't have to crash and burn.
Yeah.
They don't have to lose their jobs. They don't have to lose their wives. They don't have to lose their life, just to go and hit rock bottom.
Yeah. Well, I just think, it is so prevalent. And I think for years, and it probably still happens today, people turn a blind eye until things are too late, until it becomes a crisis. And typically, the people we deal with on the street, nobody wants to acknowledge that they need help, much less anybody in any of the first responder professions. We're the helpers. We don't ever need help. We can take care of ourselves. And there's an awful lot of fear. I think you hit the nail on the head. There's a lot of fear about losing your job. So it's easier to drink yourself, into oblivion. Or one of the big problems I understand, maybe you want to talk about, is there's an awful lot of people on legitimately prescribed painkillers out there that they got when they had some kind of an injury, usually softball or something off duty, and then they become dependent on those, and it becomes a problem.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I see it, pretty much every day. Somebody goes through their whole life, into their late 50s, never having an issue with anything, having an injury, and now they're addicted to pain medication.
Yeah.
It's physically addicting. So it changes your thought, your thought process.
Yeah.
So you need some sort of treatment to get over that. That's a big problem now.
Yeah.
That we see a lot of.
Well, before we go too long, let's throw some information out there about how they can contact you, how they can learn more, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the need for treatment.
Sure. You can contact me on my website at firstrespondertreatment.com, or you can call the toll-free number at 855 850-2405. And, you know, one of the things they're going to find is when they call, you know, they're going to talk to another first responder. Or we put a lot of first, former first responders in place that now work in the addiction field to, you know, help be around the people when they come into treatment and feel comfortable. A former corrections officer, a former sheriff. We have a former firefighter on our staff now, myself included, being a former fire captain. So to let them know they're not alone and that, you know, we understand what you go through. You know, we've been through some of the same things that you've been through. You know, it's okay to talk to us.
Yeah. Maybe can you, I don't know if you can articulate that, can you talk through sort of what the process would be of reaching out and getting help? What can they expect?
Well, basically the process is when they call first responder treatment and they think they have a problem, the admissions coordinator is going to make an assessment with them over the phone, ask them some, you know, general questions, what they're using, how much are they consuming, what their financial situation is as far as insurance, if they have any. If not, you know, do they have money to invest in the program? We'll verify the insurance benefits. We'll see exactly what their insurance pays for, and then we'll make a determination on what kind of program is appropriate. One of the things I think we do really well here for, you know, the first responder treatment is even if we're not able to place them with us, depending on what they have available to them and, you know, what resources they have available, we're going to help them find a program that's suitable for them.
Excellent. And does this process take, I mean, it happens while they're on the phone, or does it take days? I don't have a clue what it takes to get into a facility.
Pretty much, it takes typically about an hour for insurance benefits to come back on a weekday.
Okay.
You know, we can literally have people in the same day from all over the United States.
Wow. The other thing that struck me is, I mean, there's probably two audiences that we're talking to here. One is the audience that thinks they have a problem, but they're afraid to admit it. They're worried about their job being in jeopardy. And then the other audience is somebody who works right next to somebody like that, who knows they've got a problem. They can see the symptoms of it every day, and they don't really want to get them into trouble, but they know that their friend needs help, and they're not sure what to do. What can we say to these people?
Call us up. Give us a situation of what's going on. We'll try to guide you the best way we can in doing that. A lot of times, if it's somebody you work with and you're noticing problems, you're more than likely not the only one. So, you know, if you want to have an outside intervention with them, you know, outside of the job and say, look, you need to do something about this problem, or, you know, these are the consequences. You need to get help. Here, call this number, see what they have to say. You know, you want to try to do, you don't want to, I never want to see anybody's job in jeopardy. We want to try to get to the point where we can get them, in treatment and back to work healthy.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate goal. But if they're a threat to themselves and, you know, a threat to other people, you want to do whatever's best for them, because what you may not think is best at the time is ultimately going to be best for their life.
Yeah. Well, and what I want people to hear is that it is so much better to do early than procrastinate on this.
Sure.
And if I'm not mistaken, and maybe you can clarify this for me, that a lot of the ADA protections, the Americans with Disability Act, will actually protect somebody, protect their job, if they're the ones reaching out for help. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Basically, if you self-report, you have several options available. It's different with every individual, obviously. You know, if you have a lot of sick time, you can just take that sick time, go into treatment. We don't report to anybody that they were there, just to their insurance, and the insurance will never report back to the employer that they were in treatment. They're protected under HIPAA.
Okay.
And then you're also entitled to Family Medical Leave Act. Which you can miss work for a medical reason. We will fill the FMLA paperwork out for them. That way their job's protected when they go back.
Excellent. And I don't know the answer. Is it appropriate that if they're not sure, they can talk to their family doctor and they're still there's a confidentiality there in a doctor-patient relationship?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so then they can get some support that way, and then it's been, you know, kind of voluntary, as opposed to waiting too long and having somebody at work mandate that you go have a blood or alcohol test, a blood alcohol test or a breath test, and then getting yourself in trouble on the job.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, every department's different. Most of the time, you know, the answer, if you get to a point where it's a job issue, more than likely you're going to lose your job.
Yeah.
You know, some departments, you know, don't have a zero tolerance, but many do.
Yeah. Well, and we, you know, all of us in every one of our helping professions deal with people that are intoxicated, people that have drug problems, and we know that they're the last ones to admit they have a problem. So, you know, unfortunately, you have to put that bright spotlight on yourself and acknowledge that maybe you can't tell anymore, and maybe you need an objective opinion from your family or your physician or your friends. Somebody that's going to tell it to you straight before it's too late, and the person telling it to you is your supervisor.
Absolutely. Yeah, you do not want that happening.
Before we started recording, you and I were talking about the issue of PTSD, which I understand you can treat that as well, and that frequently they go hand in hand. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, we touch base on the PTSD part very heavily because with PTSD, almost half the time, if not more, there's so many different statistics out there, but, you know, there's substance abuse or alcoholism involved with PTSD. So what we're actually doing is treating two things. We're treating the substance abuse and we're treating the PTSD, and we take advantage of things like EMDR therapy, which is rapid eye movement therapy, that they do with a therapist while they're in treatment with us. We also do neurofeedback, different relaxation techniques, things like that, you know, while they're with us to help treat the PTSD.
Excellent.
And now, for whatever reason, if there's no substance abuse issue with us, we'll refer to a treatment center that just deals with PTSD only.
Okay. I don't know if there's any protocol for length of treatment. I'm sure people are always afraid that they're going to be gone for however long. Can you share anything about that? What can people expect?
Sure. A typical stay with us is it's a minimum of 30 days. We go up to 90. I would say the average median time is around 45 days.
Okay. And we're talking about medical treatment, we're talking about substance abuse, detoxification, we're talking about, you know, I would imagine you have other support mechanisms, talking about healthy lifestyle choices and things like that.
Correct. Yeah, I'll explain a little bit about what a typical, you know, the program looks like when they come. One thing about the treatment center transformations is it's a lot different than a lot of other places. And this is some of the hesitancy of going into this treatment is a lot of people think they're going into an institution. I'm going to be locked up for 30 days. I'm going to be in a whitewashed facility with crazy people. Transformations is not like that. It's a very real-life setting. They have their own private room, whether they have their own private bathroom, you know, living room, TV. They have access to a phone in their room. They're able to call unlimited long distance calling to anywhere in the United States and be in contact with their family while they're with us. They go to a private gym 3 days a week. We have two personal trainers on staff that kind of help them, you know, get back in shape again. They work with a dietitian. We get them eating healthy again. We try to involve every aspect of their life in the treatment, not just the alcohol and drugs, because that's a symptom of the problem. You remove that, you got to fix the problem.
Well, and I want to remind everybody that the whole point here is that you're, from the very first contact, you're talking to another first responder who has been there, who understands. I don't know, are they in a population of first responders, or it really depends on what the numbers are at the treatment center at the time somebody's there? It's not all first responders.
It's not all first responders. They have separate, they live in at night. First responders are in one location. And general population is in another. We room them with other first responders when they're there.
Yeah.
Okay. They have their own separate groups every day for an hour where they'll meet. And I'll just go over a few of the groups. It's a surrender group, first responders responding to job stress. And basically what's going to be talked about in that group is the different stresses that first responders face on the job other than a general population. And that's going to be run by a first responder, so they're going to understand and you know, teach you healthy ways to respond to stress in your work environment. Family issues are a big thing in first responders' lives. Mm-hmm. So there's a special group for them for that. Coping mechanisms, anger groups. Mm-hmm. So an hour a day, Monday through Friday, they're in a specialized group that focuses on issues of first responders.
And I don't mean to be indelicate, but I know how cops are. I'm not sure absolutely how firefighters are, but a lot of cops know that a lot of the basis for AA is a religious basis, and I think for some people that is intimidating. Can you share anything about that?
Well, I can share a little bit about my personal self. I am, you know, I go to AA. Mm-hmm. I am not religious at all. So I think that's just that's the stigma that AA gets from people that really haven't experienced it.
Yep.
Because I'm not a religious person at all, but, you know, I do attend AA meetings.
Yeah, I think if anybody ever stopped to actually look through AA's materials, first of all, my opinion when I first read through some of their stuff is that we should probably teach this in elementary school because it basically takes people back.
It's a guidebook for life.
Yeah, it's absolutely it's a guide for really kind of getting your act together. And most of us manage to go through life without having done any of that homework. And unfortunately, those that get themselves into a crisis find that that's the way to put their lives back together again. The rest of us are kind of living vicariously without actually really having done any of the work until we get a little bit older in our lives. But, you know, it's really impressive stuff, and I think the statistics are fairly impressive as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do know this, and this is not in every city, but there are different AA groups throughout the United States that are just for first responders as well. So, you know, if they want to take advantage of groups like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the message here,
especially in law enforcement, any cop that ever comes to the program that is going back to their local community, this is just an opinion of my own. If they're going to go to AA, I always recommend that they go maybe a town or two over than where they work.
Right.
That way there, they don't have to worry about seeing anybody they may have arrested or anything like that. And then once they get comfortable in AA and, you know, they're working a good program, you know, then you can kind of venture back into your town. But it just, in that initial setting, it'll make you feel more comfortable going, maybe opening up if you don't know and you don't think you're going to know anybody.
Yeah. I know that's a big issue for cops. They don't want to be somewhere with somebody they arrested. And yet, you know, they're backed into a corner. And if you're out there listening and that's you, you know, please hear what we're saying. It is so much better if you reach out and you ask for help and you take the initiative. And it's tough to acknowledge that you have a problem, but the signs are probably there. They're probably there financially. They're probably there in your relationships at home and maybe at work. And they may be there at work in your performance, and you may not be noticing as much as the people around you. So, you know, this is a tough position to be in, but it's not the end of the world unless you push it too far. So please, please reach out to somebody. And I think we started saying that earlier. If you know somebody that's in this position, it is a tough place to be. We're actually working on an intervention guide right now to publish through Cops Alive. And, Mark, I would welcome your input on that. But it is tough to try to tell one of your friends that they need help. And, you know, frequently those kind of things get turned away until it truly becomes an intervention where you have to, you know, get somebody into treatment immediately. And that's not the way you want to be.
Sure. And you know, the more of the family support, I always feel the better.
Yeah.
You know, and when somebody comes into our program, whether they're from California or New York, their family's involved in the treatment as well. We have family sessions every 5 weeks where they're able to come, take advantage of some groups, things like that. They can call the therapist, the primary therapist, and have one-on-ones, you know, to kind of see, you know, what that looks like. Also, another thing you were saying with the intervention is when somebody calls us and it's a really hard case that we feel that does need an intervention, we do have resources that we get them in touch with interventionists, people that are professionally trained interventionists that will come to wherever it's at and guide them in the process.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I've been told is one of the best things you can do if your friend is in need of help is make some notes, because one of the best ways to get people to acknowledge they have a problem is for you to give them real live examples of what their behavior is doing to the people around them or what it's doing to their job. And it's awfully hard for them to deny their way out of that if you can give them several clear-cut, real-life examples of what they've done, and especially if they're in the recent past and they will remember them. It's a little bit harder to play the game of, I don't really need help, that's not a big problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any other thoughts from you on suggestions if you have to approach a friend?
That actually sounded pretty good as far as, you know, if it's on paper, it kind of seems more real.
Yeah.
You know, than just bringing up things here and there that you recall. So it's almost like a book of their life saying, hey, you know, you did this, and this. And maybe, you know, puts it out on, you know, red ink for them.
Yeah.
And like I said, if it's somebody that you feel, you know, is going to need an intervention, please call, because, I mean, there's people out there that's what they do.
Yep. And there is actually a lot of work to be done if you're going to do an actual crisis intervention. You really have to have all your ducks in a row before you even approach the person. And so, you know, getting some professional help would be a godsend. So please don't hesitate to reach out and ask for guidance in that respect.
And another thing, too, especially with the law enforcement, is you want to be – there's a fine line, especially with – police officers, is, you know, because they carry a gun. I mean, and you don't want to put them in a position where they feel that there's no other way out but, you know, to commit suicide or, because, you know, that happens all the time. You know, so.
I think the message that I'm hearing from you loud and clear is that, you know, this is not the end of the world. So many people have been through treatment and have been better for it, that they didn't lose their jobs, that they, you know, if they do it early enough, they're not going to lose their family, they're not going to lose their financial support. But unfortunately, there are plenty of stories out there. I mean, we hear them at Cops Alive every week of people that have just gotten themselves in trouble. They dug a hole that's too deep, and then they can't get out of it. The union can't support them. Their friends can't support them. The agency's going to turn their back, and that's a horrible feeling. So if you're listening and that's you or somebody you know, please, you've got to recognize that the time to get help is when it's still early.
Absolutely.
So, Mark, it's been a couple of minutes. Would you give us the website and the phone number again, please?
Yeah, the website is www.firstrespondertreatment.com.
And that's not first spelled out, isn't it? 1ST?
Well, it's actually, you can do it either way.
Ah, very clever. Good job.
And then the toll-free number is 855-350-2405.
Is there anything else that you want to share about the program?
One other thing that we didn't discuss that, in my opinion, is really important, that we also do a full supplement holistic approach. We actually test the levels in the brain as far as their dopamines and serotonins and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we use all natural supplements to help boost them levels in their brain. Our goal when somebody comes to treatment through us is to not have them on medications. Now, and I always make this a point when I tell people this, there are some people that may need to be on medications, and we recognize that.
Yeah.
So we do have a psychiatrist on staff just in case there is cases where people do need to be on some kind of antidepressant. But our goal is to get you on something that's all natural. And Dr. Sands, who does that program, he's also a chiropractor as well. You know, he meets with them twice a week. He checks the levels through a urine test, and he adjusts the supplements according to, you know, what's actually depleted in their brains. And we've had tremendous success with that, and not having people on medications, or at least maybe just one medication to set of three or four when they leave.
Yeah. I don't remember whether we said you're located in, is it Delray Beach, Florida? Sorry.
Delray Beach, Florida. Yeah.
Yeah. Delray Beach, Florida. So that, I mean, that's not critical. They can come to you from any state in the union, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. People come from all over the country to come here for treatment. I always tell people you don't want to let the location be a determining factor in the treatment. You want to let the quality of care. It's just a plane ride away. Basically what will happen is, and I'm just going to give you a scenario, if somebody's coming into treatment, is we have a driver, we have picked them up from the airport, they meet them at baggage claim. Depending on whether they need a detox center or to come right into transformations, you know, we'll pick them up, we'll bring them in, and then we'll take them back to the airport, you know, when they go.
Great. Well, Mark, I want to thank you for what you guys are doing. You know, I know there are plenty of people out there in EMS, the fire service, and law enforcement that feel completely alone when the stresses of the job have gotten to be overwhelming and they've tried to manage it themselves and they've lost track of where they are and they're self-medicating with alcohol or prescription drugs. And it's a very lonely place to be, and I commend you for, you know, reaching out to our brothers and sisters and all the first responder professions and trying to create an environment where they feel safe enough that they can say, hey, I need help, and they're going to reach out.
Thank you.
Anything else we need to cover?
I think we pretty much covered.
Okay. Well, again, first responder treatment. And, Mark, I want to thank you very much for what you're doing and, you know, keep up the good work, because well, there's plenty of work out there to be done. I want to thank all of you for listening. This has been another edition of Cops Alive Audio Bulletin. This is John Marks. Please tune in next time and keep track of what's going on at copsalive.com. Thanks. Stay safe.